I'll intervene to make sure that you have a question.
Yeah, we prefer Q&A instead of...
Yes, the pre-prepared?
Yeah, yes. Although we didn't know about that.
This is me being Alex Trebek here, right. Presenting, minus the mustache. So we're going to deal with and touch on a wide variety of topics that people would like to hear from Mike and Bez about today. So first of all, and the question first and foremost that you probably hear on a regular basis, there's a lot of injuries in the first team throughout the squad over the course of the season. I'll start with you, Bill. How do you explain what's actually transpired? What's the club, what's the medical staff, and what's the team saying about
it? Yeah, I brought some pages because I wanted to give you guys some stats today. So it's been an incredibly frustrating year that has had some highlights as well, right? We made such a great run early on in beating Tigres and Club America and coming within a penalty shot of doing what no other MLS team has ever done, win the CONCACAF Champions League. But it took a toll. We wound up having four very key players go down during that span. Drew Moore and Chris Mavinga, and then Jozy Altidore and Victor Vasquez. And that really crippled us for a while. I will say, and I know Tim agrees, that I think there was a sense within the organization that, you know, May and June, we'd kind of lick our wounds a little bit, and then we'd be able to turn it on. And what we found was, without these guys healthy, we just weren't good enough. We weren't able to rise to the occasion on a number of key games that we've had over the course of the year. I do want to read to you, and Tim and I go through this very closely, to tell you the effect of those four players. We'll have it here. So Chris Mavinga and Drew Moore have only played together three times all year. So we've played 43 games. They've played together three times. And they're our two best center backs, right? When just one of them plays, when either Chris or Drew plays, our goals against is 1.35. A little higher than we would like, but 1.35 is a playoff team. That's a team that can make the playoffs. Without them, when neither one, so that's over the course of 23 games. So it's 31 goals in 23 games. When neither one of them plays, which has been 20 games this year, we haven't had Drew or Chris. Can anyone guess what the goals against is? 2.15. And you guys, clearly, as season ticket holders, you know soccer, you're not going to win a lot of games when you average over two goals against. So that is what we kind of internally call the Mavinga-Moore effect. We just are not good enough with at least one of those guys in the back. They're both veterans, especially Drew's presence with younger guys like Eric and Nick. It's a calming, more cerebral approach to the game, which you've seen the last few years with him. And Chris, I think, when he's on his game, is the best defender in the league. And we clearly, just even last week having him on the field, what a difference we are as a team. The other thing is the two attacking players, Jozy and Victor, being out. And so we were really, as we rolled into August and September, we really started to see trends with the team. And we really started to analyze, you know, what's going on and when who's on the field and what do we look like when we have at least two of those four players on the team and less. And so I'll give you a statistic. So when just two of Jozy, Victor, Chris, and Drew play, our record this year is 13-7-3. So just two of those four players, when they play, with 13-7-3, that is 1.83 points per game. If you correlate that over the course of the season, 63 points. Pretty good year. This year with Atlanta and New York would have put us in third. But somewhere the cost of that year, with those guys in the field, I think maybe we beat them, and they drop points. With only one, so when we only have, let's say, just Drew, or just Victor, or just Jozy, 3-11-6. And you know, what it's telling us, and what Tim and I have really seen, is our depth was not strong enough this year. So we could absorb the loss of, let's say, two of our starters. We weren't able to absorb the loss of three of our starters. And it's a good sample size, you know, 20 games to 23 games, that you really see the difference. And, you know, if you guys have been to a lot of our games, you see the difference when, you know, at least let's say Josie and Chris are on the field, as opposed to only having one of those guys. And so as we looked at the year, we think the number one by far key problem we've had this year is those injuries that happened in the early part of the year to those four guys. But what I will say is there's also then other factors that I think because of the strength of our team the last couple of years have surfaced that, and Tim and I, we it's not going to be a complete rebuild. That's not what this team needs. We do need to retool in a few areas to improve, in a lot of ways, a couple of our starters, but also that depth. We need to have a rotation of 15, 16 players throughout. If we're going to play in CONCACAF, play in Canadian Championship, play in MLS, we have to have a rotation of 16 players, 15 players at minimum. We tried to do it during CONCACAF Champions League and MLS in the early part of the season. We pretty much tried to do it with 12 players, and it hurt us. We got some guys injured, and we brought in an analytical company that's going to help us in how we manage our player minutes. So that alone, people are shocked when they see those statistics because you really see the difference when we have our best players. So for Greg, it's been tough because he's had to coach sometimes not a very optimal lineup. And so it's something as fans, I hope you realize we look at this stuff and we really try to look at the trends. And then you try to look at, okay, who are the guys on the field when we're losing? And I'm not going to name players' names, but there's some guys that have underperformed this year when given minutes to play. And we have to either replace them or, in the case of coaching, they need to be coached up and play better. So. So that kind of gives you a little analysis of what we've really come out with on why our regular season is what it is right now. If we just had CONCACAF Champions League and Canadian Championship, we'd be okay, but the regular season's been tough.
Did you have anything to add?
No, I think Bill hit it all. I mean, in terms of why we've had injuries, I think that's something we're obviously looking into it. I think what we're working with this company, I think number one is we need a proper preseason, right? So the league created this obviously with CONCACAF, this new structure. It's really CONCACAF who did it. So the new structure this year was the first time any team has ever gone through CONCACAF in this current format, which was 8 games if you played through the final. And you're playing these 8 games with essentially 4 weeks of preseason, which we've looked at around the world in any competition. That's just not enough in terms of building a base that you can, maybe if you're playing just CONCACAF Champions League, it would have been fine, but to overlay MLS games within that is going to be hard. So there's what we call these blocks of risk. These 3 matches in 9 games we can cope with if it's a 1 block. But once you start talking 4-12, 5-15, 6-18, that's where our injuries started to increase 12 times, 18, even 20 times risk of injury once you got into those blocks of 6 of games in 18 days. So what we're learning from that is we got to eliminate these blocks of risk, as we call them. Keep it to the 3-9, which is the Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, and then hopefully then you can have a normal week after so guys can recuperate and have a good regen session. We need a full season, so we're working with the league to see are there ways to get guys in earlier. It's a players union issue, right? So it's something that might be hard, but then it's incumbent upon the players to prepare in the off season and for us to give them good programs. And so obviously it's a little challenging when you make it to MLS Cup and you have 43 days of offseason, right? So there's all these factors that we're looking at that we think contributed, and with the help of this company, to the injuries. But I do believe what Bill ended with, which is at the end of the day, there's still some performances that aren't good enough. And so we will have individual meetings with all the players at the end of the year, and we'll look at them, and we'll have the conversation about how they can improve, and then we'll hear feedback from them about how we can improve. That's what it's about for all of us.
So I want to give you, Tim talked about the game. So our first game was February 20th against Colorado. And then we talked this block of games. The last one is when we lost to Guadalajara in penalty shots, April 25th. It was 13 games in 65 days. So it was a game every 5 days. And during that stretch, you had, Victor Vasquez got injured 11 minutes into Tigres. If you remember, that's when he came out. And he was done. Chris Mavinga, if you remember, the second game against Tigres, 62 minutes in, got pulled. So the very next game, he got injured. Josie against Club America was the second game, if you remember, 7 minutes in, came out. And again, the body just broke down because we didn't have a good enough rotation during that time. And then Drew was actually right after, at the very end of the penalty shot loss to Chivas, Drew felt a twinge in his thigh about the 85th minute mark, and he finished the game, but he never played again literally till now. He came back very short a few games ago, but then tweaked it again, and he's been out since. So just during that 65 days, those 13 games, the toll it took on us, and what this analytic firm is telling us is we need to have a stronger rotation of players. And what Tim and I have surmised is you can't, right now we need to improve those extra players because, you know, we could have had a 16-man rotation. It still wouldn't have been good enough this year. So that's something we're going to look at right now.
The one thing about every injury that you mentioned, all of those came early in the season in the CONCACAF Champions League as well. The last 3 years, honestly, have been a blur with you playing so late. You're a product of your own success as well, right? And because you won more silverware this year, being Canadian champions yet again, you're going back in the CONCACAF Champions League. So what did you learn from that, and how will there be maybe a different alternative approach between Champions League play and MLS play?
You know, we discuss this. Years back, a lot of MLS teams didn't take CONCACAF seriously, and it was actually, I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but in 2011, I was managing a team called Real Salt Lake, and we decided we were going to put everything into CONCACAF Champions League, and we wound up making it to the final. We were the first MLS team to ever make it to a final, and we lost, and I think it opened, and what happened is we wound up having these sold-out crowds in the semifinals and the finals, and kind of captured the attention of the league, and it also gained us a lot of respect within the region. And then you started seeing more and more MLS teams really go after this competition. 2015, Montreal made the final, and then wound up losing, and then obviously us this year. And we talked about what kind of club do we want to be. And you look at the best clubs in the world, they want to win Champions League and they want to win their domestic league. They don't choose one over the other. So we've decided with the resources we're given by MLSE and what we aspire to, we want to go after both. And we need to now do a better job during the regular season. Tim talked about training camp. We're going to prepare a bit better for Champions League. We will rotate our lineup a bit more with MLS regular season and Champions League. But we have to go after both. So that's the club that's who our owners want us to be. They don't want to throw anything away, and they want us to be able to compete on multiple fronts. So I was just in Real Madrid with Tim last week, and we saw the best club in the world, and we saw how they approach their championships and how they approach their domestic competition and how they treat the players. Imitation is the highest form of flattery, and we were so impressed when we came away and on what they do as a club to prepare. They played, I think, 61 games. They played, some were friendlies, 61 games they played over the course of a calendar year, and their thing is generally it's among 16 players. 16 players is kind of the bulk of the guys that play most of the minutes, and so that's why I've used this number 16. That we're talking about is we have to be 16 players deep, and there can't be as big a drop-off. Our challenge in a salary cap league is sometimes you do have a big drop-off, and clearly our third forward or fourth forward isn't Sebastian Giovinco. And so it's something that we have to try to find the right solution there. So that gives you a little insight into that.
And I think that plays well, and I think that's the expectation of the supporters as well, and you go try to win every competition here, and that's what the biggest and best clubs in world football do on a regular basis. So you mentioned Giovinco. He had some comments again about the state of the field. It's been a difficult year again, playing games here in Toronto in February, and it's been a topic of discussion over the course of the year. Just internally, how do you respond to critiques, criticisms, suggestions like that from one of your star players?
The death of Tim and I. So I'll give you a little background on the field. A decision was made after MLS Cup last year. We have what are called grow lights. And so we can grow the grass in the winter. And rather than putting down a new sod field, we actually made a decision to try to grow the grass with our grow lights in time for February, because there was a fear that with the sod, it actually wouldn't root. And then our groundskeeper felt that if we grew it, it would root faster. And it was the wrong decision at the end of the day. The field wasn't ready when we started playing with the CONCACAF games. Tim and I have had multiple conversations with a number of our players about it, and in some ways it's a little bit of a built-in excuse that sometimes too often we focused on the field, but the field has not been great, and it's led to a decision we've made moving on. But then we decided, hey, we need to get new sod down, so we put new sod down. We had a two-week window, was it June? Mm-hmm. We put it in June during the FIFA window, and it just hasn't taken. And, you know, the last 2 years we've had the Argos play here. The field has not been an issue. But literally the one decision that was made to grow the grass as opposed to put down a new sod field, in hindsight, was the wrong decision. And so then the new sod field did not take well enough. So now you still see the softness, the clumps, and the grass just has never recovered. So decision we made going forward, we're going to spend about $1.7 million to put in what's called a hybrid surface. It's Sis grass. Emirates Stadium has it. Chelsea plays on it. Stamford Bridge. Six of the 12 stadiums in the World Cup had it. It's 5% synthetic, 95% grass. And some of the best in NFL now, Lambeau Field just put it in. And so what it does is the synthetic portion gives you the base. It goes 20 inches into the ground, and it gives you a firmness, and the grass grows all around that. And so we are sparing no expense to have the best field we can have going forward. We added four more grow lights, so essentially our entire field can now be covered with grow lights. And we're trying to give our groundskeeper everything he can do to have a proper field. But that gives you the backstory of why Sebastian, Michael, and some of the other guys have voiced their concerns about the field, and generally for them it's in the heat of the moment. I spoke to Sebastian on Tuesday and I said why, and he said, Bill, they keep asking me. So it is what it is, and you know, we've had to try to move forward, and so long term, and I hope you understand with our front office and with MLSE, we will always do what we can to be the best. And so we're going to put down which at this point is the best surface, the most newly advanced surface that anyone could put down, and we're going to put it down. Going to be the first team in Canada to put it down. So first team in MLS actually. So the NFL just did it with Lambeau Field. So that gives you the insight into the grass. Sebastian is Sebastian, and, you know. He told me. Bill, I can't promise you if they ask me after the game today, and so we'll see what he says.
I'll be there. I'll just point out that if you saw Wembley this morning, one of the homes of football, I mean, they're dealing with the same thing right now. So everything always seems much bigger when it's in your own backyard, but for what's going on here, I think we're very fortunate. Again, these are questions from you, what you submitted. Some fans say 2 months later, the stadium seems to be a little bit quieter, and there's a noticeable gap in the south end. Is there any plans to kind of make up for some of the energy which may be lost due to some of the things that happened with the Nibiriani?
These are presidential
ones. I'll get to Tim in a moment.
Presidential questions.
I can give you a breather if you want.
So look, we had a tough situation.
I just
had coffee with a guy, Martin, who's one of the members of Inebriati this week, and it was really a tough situation. We had a group, and I think they admittedly would say that, you know, of their group, they maybe had a handful of guys that were here for the wrong reasons. And it wound up spilling over to an incident we had in Ottawa, which I don't care where you are, anywhere in the world, if a flare goes on the field and stops the field of play, that's a real problem. And that was, we had had multiple issues, and for the most part, we were able to work them out. They get suspended for a game here or there. They had, if you remember, a flag that was very obscene.
We had more issues than any other team in the league. The league office...
Some issues. Some issues. And we worked them through... We suspended some of their members at points, and I would say we had a pretty good relationship. But at the end of the day, when that happened, we paid Ottawa $10,000 to fix their field and their stand. What happened was, and in this day and age, you should all know, there's cell phones and there's videos. Like, we have cameras in stadiums. There's a camera right there, and you can. Actually, that's not a camera. I thought it was.
It could be.
It could be, right? I thought it was. I thought it looked like. It's got to be one in here. One somewhere. So if you remember the Josie Altidore fight in the tunnel, there was cameras. And we actually put two more, because what we didn't catch was what happened on the outside coming in. So we put two more there. Ottawa had them. And we were able to positively identify a number of people from that group and then from another group. And at the end of the day, we decided that it had passed the tipping point. And so we no longer will sanction the group. I'll tell you, they brought a lot of energy to the games. A lot of people, and maybe people in this room, say, I love them, I just don't want to sit with them, right? And that's pretty much what you get. And they did. They brought a lot of energy. And what I've asked them, and they've come and asked if they can eventually rejoin with another group or... as a new group, I told them we're going to have to very much vet it out. We're going to have to give it some time. There's a course they have to take with MLS to get back in good standing. But we just can't have what has happened in the past. And so at some point, you know, if it's your business, you're all, I'm sure, work somewhere or even in your homes, when people, this is our home. And that was Ottawa's home. And when people do things like that, there has to be some kind of consequence. So it is quieter. But I will say, I think some of our results at home have been poor. And, you know, last week was loud, you know, when we were scoring the goals. And the LA Galaxy game, for me, was as loud in any game as maybe since MLS Cup. That was a 5-3 game. Crazy. It was actually, that game was the most number of people we've ever had in BMO Field, ever, even for a regular season. Not for the MLS Cup was more, but regular season. But that group brought an energy. So there was a positive of that, but it didn't outweigh the negatives that we had to deal with. So it was a tough situation, because they do have some guys in the group that I know and get along with. And so that was not easy.
It's funny how that works. Performance and results. Equals, you know, more crowd noise, yeah. And a more livelier stadium as well. I have a best question.
All right, good.
There's always seems to be a running conversation about what kind of contract players are under. And let's be clear here that Jovinko, Bradley, Vasquez, and Altidore are all their contracts taken care of through 2019.
Yeah, that's correct.
Now, have you started plans beyond that? How does that work, you know, in congruence with those contracts? How does that all work?
Yeah, I mean, look, you're always speaking with their agents, right? I mean, you have relationships with them. You're talking about them, talking with the agent, how the player's doing, what does he need, you know, even the field issue, the agent might call and say, hey, this is what Seba's feeling, because, you know, there's just a liaison. Because sometimes, you know, you want the players to focus on football, on playing, and so their agent takes care of a lot of things for them. That's an important role, and so... the contract's no different, right? Clearly, players want to have a secure future because they have a limited time to play the game, right? That is, there's always going to be these two issues, right? You have a club that wants to wait until the end because you don't know how the team's playing, and then you have a player who wants security about the future. And so it's a balance, right? What I would say is, if you're not making the playoffs and we're not winning, then we can't go out and say and reward everybody. I mean, what we would want to do is, again, get to the playoffs and then get the cup, and then like we did last year, which there was a few players that we actually did, we negotiated before their contract was up because they got us the treble, right? And that's, they're deserving of those rewards, right? But you know, as I'm starting to sit with players and they're asking, hey, maybe kind of get a little more money, maybe more term, I say, look, you know, it's very hard for me to sit with Bill or the board and say, we're going to extend this player right now in the middle of this year when we haven't even made the playoffs and work. So, and I think they get that. I think they're smart. I mean, they don't like it, but they get it. But in North America, and especially in hockey and basketball, we wait till the last year of the deal. We're at the end, right? LeBron played his contract out. Kyle Lowry, DeMar, these players played out. In Europe, they don't. You have one a good year, you tear the contract up, you sign a new contract. You have another good year, you tear it up. You're always getting a new three-year contract every year you have a good year. But what's funny is when you have a bad year, you don't tear the contract up and go the other way. Like it's just not good business practices of what they do in Europe, which is why you have such, you know, the issue of bankruptcy and player inflation, right? Sign a contract. You negotiate the contract on fair terms. Both parties know what they're getting into. There are performance bonuses. And you're performing, and when you play well, you get bonused out. So when you win a championship, that's what we want you to do. That's what you're supposed to do, right? And so even when you do give someone a new contract when you're winning and when you're winning championships, I would still argue that that's what they were paid to do from the beginning, right? So obviously this is sort of the lawyer in me coming out, but it's that's especially when you have a year like today, we have to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, now's not the right time. Let's go into next year. We do have a competition in Champions League that I think everyone on our team wants to play in, because that's what they dream about. Those are the type of environments that our players want to play in. I think there's, even if we go into back to the previous questions about what happened this year, I think Champions League is a really high level of soccer, especially if you saw even the Campeones Cup. That style of play suits our team a little bit better than some of the teams in MLS who kind of hump the ball. You know, it's maybe not pretty soccer, and we got to get over that, right? I'm not saying that's an excuse, but our guys like to play in Champions League. You know, the world's watching. It's their ticket to the World Club World Cup. And so regardless of the contract situation, I think that they'll honor it. And unlike some places around the world, I think they will honor their contract and they'll play. And then when the time is right, we will re-sign. You know, someone like Osorio, in his contract year, he stepped up and became the player that we were all hoping he could be, right? Always waiting for him to take, you know, the game by the horns and become the playmaker or the goal scorer, whatever you want to call it, that we thought he could become, especially when Vasquez was out this year. He stepped up and he's performed, right? And we rewarded him with a contract that's three times what he was making before, right? And he gets to stay in Toronto and become the guy. And we'll start to put some marketing efforts behind him. He's in the front of the FIFA cover, if you saw that, which is really neat for Oso and for a local kid. And so, again, I think it's important to incentivize the players to perform and to win for the team. When it comes to the contracts, we shy away from sort of individual performances, goals, if we can, because we want it all to be tied to playoffs, winning, trophy case, you know, those types of things that our fans are here for.
Is it something that all supporters worry about? What about this player's contract running down? What's the club going to do? It's not as if right in that moment, Tim, you're saying, oh, yeah, I better get on with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is something that you plan ahead.
It keeps me up at night, right?
You understand, like, the progression, and you're always thinking one, two, three steps ahead.
Yeah, you have to be, because the agent's already two steps ahead, so you got to be three of steps ahead. But it's, again, it comes back to relationships, and hopefully you're having conversations with the player so that the one time he's in your office is not just always about money, right? That's another thing that's very important. I try to go to as many games as I can so that if you are signing a new contract or even if you're trading a player, that when you hear that I'm trading you, it's not the first time you've seen the player all year, right? And they're like, who are you, right? That you've been with them for this season. You've been with them in wins and losses. And so they understand that you know what they're going through as a team, as the coaches. And I think that helps when you're negotiating. I really do.
There's a question, Bill, about ticket prices, and everyone wants their tickets to remain at a reasonable number. I don't know one supporter that feels a different way, but when ticket prices do go up, it's being put back into the club. Is it? Maybe you can explain how that process works.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Neil Davidson is a writer for Canadian Press, and we had a great conversation the other day, and he sits in section 121 here in the second row, and he's had them since 2008. And the last few years, that's a section which literally has had 100% renewal. And we look at everything section by section, demand, supply, like any business would. And his section, in the last 2 years, we've I would say dramatically even, increased the price of his section. But then we looked over the course of the last 11 years, and in 11 years, he's paying, I think, $500 more than he paid 11 years ago. And when you take it over the 11 years, I think it came out to be 2.3% increase since 2008. And He wrote an article about it. He put it as the very last line in his article to admit it, because he said to me, when you look at it that way, yeah, it's okay. And so we do, I will tell you, I have everything that dates all the way back to 2007. We do try to look historically where we've been, where we are with ticket pricing. We also look at the lease and the wraps and the Argos now that they're under my umbrella. We look at the Jays a little bit, but we more look internally at our own family. You'd be really interested how many of our fans attend multiple teams. It's quite a bit. We tend to cross over more with the Raptors. The Argos actually cross over more with the Leafs. But we look at it, and we look section by section, and with where we are as a club, we felt there were some sections that we needed to adjust in terms of the pricing. We still are very, I think, moderately priced versus the other teams in town. And there, I can tell you, we don't make money, like the other two teams. And anything that we make certainly stays within the club, because our organization believes so much in Major League Soccer and where this league can be 10 years from now that in some ways we've been at the forefront with the designated player investments. You know, when they did the stadium development here, we spend all our money, the TAM money, if you're familiar with that, was a new way to acquire players. There's now going to be a youth fund, you might have read a little bit about, where we're going to be able to spend, is it $3 million? $3 million?
Hasn't been approved
yet. But the number is floating out there that teams are going to be able to acquire young players under the age of 22, and again outside the salary cap budget, and so these are things that we will always do, and so you never have to consider Toronto FC under MLSE's ownership that we are going to try to be cheap or try to go on the low. We're going to always try to go where market demands are for our players and with the seats in the building. That's how we, and everything generally, and I'm sure you sit in a number of different sections, wherever you are, we generally go by what's called sell-through and then the historical renewal ratio. So if everyone's renewing and the sell-through is at 100% or 95% or 90%, generally we'll look at adjusting the price up a bit. We do have sections that we actually lower when they go below 70% renewal, because basically what the customers are telling us is, hey, a little too overpriced for me to come back in this seat. So we really do look at literally section by section the whole stadium.
We just literally have a minute left.
Yeah,
I wanted to deal with.
So let's take some questions.
If there's any questions out there, then feel free. Just to answer your question, if this is it, we did not coordinate our suits today. Get in touch.
But yeah, no, we could take some more time. So I'd love to answer any questions you have for Tim or myself, and if you had any for Garrett,
yes,
feel free.
I'm a bulldog, you drive a Jeep, that's all.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, just a quick question to touch base on what we talked about earlier. With the nature of how late in the season Lucas Hansen joined, have you seen enough? Like, I know I can give you my opinion, but I think he's been connecting well. But have you seen enough of him as a player to know that this contract being, well, the option to buy it later?
What's your opinion on him? I think
he's great. I think he's connecting well with other players. He's reading. He's making runs on other people. And that was his first game. Like, I was like, wow, this guy's great. But have you seen enough in it? Because I know there's only a short window. You have to, him on loan.
I've seen it. I think we like what we see. There's enough sample size to know what he is, and he helps our team. The issue is it's a loan, and basically to get a deal done, especially in the middle of the year, the option is high to the point that he would be a DP, right? So at some point you're going to have to negotiate the option price if we wanted to keep him, assuming all the three DPs are here, right? We're going to get three. So that's the challenge right now, and we'll let the season play out and see where we're at. But that's the challenge. But we like him, and the team likes him. The energy he brought, I thought, when Joe went out last game,
absolutely,
you saw that he works
fantastic.
A tremendous amount of work up top for the team, which is honestly that's something that the team needs sometimes, because I think it's too easy for their opponents to get into our half of the field sometimes, especially early on in games, and it puts our defense under tremendous pressure if we don't have people up top who are pressing and at least forcing them to one side, right? If the defense is easily able to switch back and forth, and there's more running for the defenders, and it allows them to penetrate much easier. So Lucas is a guy, you know, and there's a lot of younger players who, when they step on the field, we're expecting them to show that they want to stay there. And sometimes it's not always scoring goals. It's doing the defensive work. So.
And with Lucas, it's not his salary. It's the acquisition fee that would essentially make him a designated player, unless we're able to maybe renegotiate what that fee is, and it's something that we'll probably work very hard at, because he's been a really positive addition to the team. And one of our challenges also, and we, you know, misjudged on a couple this year, when you do bring players in or you let players go, the dynamic within your locker room and the friendships that it disrupts, and the competitions that come at different positions that create sometimes divisions. And every sport in the world deals with that, every club in the world deals with that. You know, the last 2 years, we've been a very, very happy, cohesive group of players. And this year, and especially when you lose some, it exasperates and you have challenges. Lucas, on the other hand, has been a guy that's come in, and everyone loves him. He keeps his head down. He works hard. He smiles. He laughs. And those are the kind of guys that, you know, that's why I wanted your opinion, because you can see it. He has a good infectious personality.
He
guys,
fits that metric.
He does.
He's down on the team. He's a team player.
Yeah.
He brings positivity when he comes in. Like.
Yeah. So we see what you see. It's now just it's going to be to find the number that works. You had a question.
Oh, that was about, I assume the league will have more GAM and TAM and that. And it seems to be gradually pushing the Canadian players down the list, that now we only have one Canadian starter each game. It's like it gradually, like from the good old days when the team was bad, there was three or so, but is it gradually being pushed out of the league?
Do you want Canadians to play?
Well,
the club. Do you care?
That's my, I guess that's why I'm leaving, because I found a league now that does have Canadians. I really hit hard, like 52 League One games, and TFC 3 was great, but that the guys will eventually go somewhere or just always be, you know, TFC 2 and then they're out.
It's a tough one. I'll let Tim give his opinion. It's a
It's a meritocracy where our board wants to win. We want to win trophies, and no other, you know, most 99% of the teams in the league are putting out the best players they can money can buy based on the money that we have available. $4 million in the cap. You have 3 DPs, and then you have $4 million in TAM between the discretionary and mandatory. So, what I would like to see is a developmental system in Canada grow, including the CPL, to the point where the Canadians can earn it and the Americans can earn it. And that's what we saw with Osorio this year. So what I would say is they have to earn it, right? The players first have to become reliable. Greg, we had a coaches or academy meeting a couple games ago where all the academy parents were out here and all the players were lined up, 150 players in our academy, and Greg Fanny turned around and said, you know, it's not about the stepovers, it's not about the goals you score. And the number one thing to play in the first team, you've got to be reliable. Because you're going to be stepping on the field with Jovinko and Altidore, and when the ball comes to you, the team's not relying on you to be a difference maker yet. Especially when you're young. It's can you connect the pass? And I think guys like Liam Frazier have taken massive strides forward this year in the ability to be reliable. And I think that's important. So. I think the national team is going to be key, and I think John Herdman has put in a structure that's reliable. It's very hard to develop players in any system if the top players in that country aren't being rewarded by getting into a national team that's competing in real competition, right? And so they get to then get players at the highest level, and they're playing in the Gold Cup, and they're playing in the Hex for qualifying, and they get to the World Cup. Like, all of these things are part of an important structure that frankly, Canada has missed out on the last 20 years because of change that have hurt the Canadian player. But I think the Premier League is will be a good thing. More jobs for people in soccer. You know, you said you're those are the colors of the team, the local team. That's a good thing. You know, Jimmy Brennan and those guys, it'll be more opportunity for Canadians to play. But at the end of the day, Division One, anywhere in the world, go look in England, English Premier League, how many English players are playing on Manchester City or on Chelsea, these players? It's really gone down. So And that's what we want to be. Our ambition is to be, you know, a consistent contender in North America, and we want to be one of the biggest clubs in MLS. And that's what it's going to take, so we want them to earn it.
Yeah. As a Canadian that grew up through the system as well, I played university football. With all due respect, we weren't anywhere near good enough. Like, that's what it comes down to, top clubs and top players. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Any more questions? I have one final one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, just other than, like, you talked about that, you talked about injury and potentially the team dynamics that will change, what's keeping you up at night as you move forward into the next season? And then the other conversely to that is, what are you most excited about?
I'm most excited that we're going to go back to CONCACAF Champions League. I think the way we approached that competition last year, I think was better than any team that in MLS history has ever approached. We beat, you know, even my Salt Lake team that made it to the finals, we were in group play and we beat Cruz Azul, but we never were in a knockout game against a Mexican opponent. We did something no one else has ever done. We beat two Mexican opponents in knockout series. I think when healthy, we will be equipped to win that competition. So that's what I'm most excited about. What keeps me up at night is that this new grass system we put in isn't the answer. And I'm hoping that we can go back to 2016 and 17, which is where the field wasn't an issue, and we had a football team and a soccer team, and we reached great heights with the soccer team. That keeps me up at night is the field issue, because I can't. Tim knows it is a nightmare, because we unfortunately cannot give our players the best surface to play on, and it's tough, because you want to give, you know, these are like our kids, you want to give your kids the best of everything, and we can't. So that's what keeps me up at night. How about you, Tim?
You know, I think for me it's all about the players. So I said it earlier, it's the contracts, right? And the term and the timing, when, you know, that's what we're paid to do, is to make sure that we have the best talent that we can, given our resources. And so that's what keeps me up at night. I think that the just to give a different answer, the Champions, like, I think the World Cup being in Canada is really, really, it's more of a long term. And I know it's less TFC, but, you know, the opportunity to maybe host and to really create a nation of soccer in Canada, that and then to have a team on the pitch. I think it's going to be the next 8 years will be really incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, sure, right? So you have a football team, you have a soccer team, but, you know, I always go back to 16 and 17. It wasn't an issue. And even with our players, it wasn't an issue. The grass was strong. The roots were really deep. We managed to schedule well. And this year through, and it goes back to the decision to grow the grass as opposed to putting down sod. And then it's just a series of, once the games are on, the games are always played. And the grass, just, even when we put down the new sod, it wasn't able to gain the grip that you need. And it just... and it exasperated it. So, you know, we had TFC 2 games. We had TFC 2 games here because we were so confident. Because you plan those games, you know, essentially at the end of the year before, when, hey, our grass was not an issue. And so we've looked around the world. In the English Premier League, my notice, there's 7 stadiums that have a rugby team and a soccer team playing the same field. And it's, so we're not unusual in that there's 2 teams playing. We have to get this right with the hybrid grass, and then I think the field becomes a non-issue again. I'll tell you, we spend a lot of money on this field. We have 4 full-time groundskeepers between here and our training ground. You know, if you all manage a budget, I'm like, how do we spend 150,000 field supplies and stuff like that? Like, it's a lot, though. We put a lot into the field. So, of course, it would be better if there was just a soccer team, right? But our company is invested in the football team. They've actually put it under my umbrella, which really helps, frankly, the soccer team. Because I will say there was some things we've done differently this year that have helped the soccer team. But it is, and I say this, it is what it is. Like, our ownership is committed to the football team, and what they've asked me is make it work. And so that's why when I went and told them, here's what we need, and it's $1.7 million, the answer was yes. So that was a good thing. So I hope that's a fair answer for you.
I want to thank Bill and Tim for taking some time today. Really appreciate that. And everyone for coming out a little early today on your Thanksgiving weekend. Should be a great match, 5 p.m. kickoff. Last time the Whitecaps were here, it was a very good result. I think that they were wishing they were halfway or across the country on their way back to British Columbia by that time. So let's hope for a really good result today. So thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving to all.
Thank you. If anyone ever has any questions, Frank, feel free to reach out. You know, Tim and I have simple emails, and feel free to reach out to us and any questions, anything like that. We value you as customers. We had just under 25,000 season ticket holders here. There's 24 and a half, and we value every single one of them. And we've grown a lot. You know, when 2000, going into the 2016, before we went to MLS Cup, we had about 18,000. So we've grown our business by about 6,500 season ticket holders. So we do truly appreciate you guys being there with us We appreciate how tough of a regular season this has been. So hopefully we were able to give you some honest answers.
Rain or snow.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you. Right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.